That's easier. No, it's just a can, bright.
Are you warm? Yeah.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm warm.
Guys, I don't know how to keep on that. Well, right.
It actually, yeah, because it actually looks better on when it's live. Yeah.
It's like not it's, the glare, and I'm, people aren't squinting. Light.
Right, right.
Ambience. That's what I want to hear in a military story. Ambience. Are you streaming that?
Yeah, it has been.
Okay. Sure. Well, so you're going to bring this Peter in.
I'm Tom. Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua. Three men and a microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Honey, how many times do I have to move your old army bag? It's taking up too much room in the closet.
It's a duffel bag. It's full of my old uniforms.
And are you going to wear them again?
Yeah, maybe. Someday.
Uh-huh. And what size do you wear now?
Whatever.
Honey, why don't you take them to Military Mike's? You're certainly there enough.
It's Iron Mike's, and at least he doesn't make comments about my weight.
Bring your old military gear down to Iron Mike's Military Exchange. They'll turn your old uniforms, gear, and military collectibles into cash. So if you drug it back from overseas and it doesn't fit your motif, we want it. Iron Mike's wants your Class A's, Alphas, Hammies, Fatigues, Utilities, Digis. We want your Deuce gear, Molly gear, Alice gear, Web gear. Bring in your Poly Pros, new boots, used boots. Heck, if it's green, camouflaged, or digital, we want it. Give it a good home, used, pre-enjoyed. Iron Mike's has a bin for it. Iron Mike's buys, sells, and trades. Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York. Check out all their newly acquired items at militaryexchange.co.
WOKR, and this is Civil War Radio. Can I tell you something? Got to tell you one thing. If you expect the freedom that you say is yours, prove to me that you deserve it. Help us to preserve it. Or being free will just be words and nothing more. Welcome to Canandaigua 1310 WOKR. This is Civil War Radio with Armando Marinetti, who got a personal mention last night at the Conservative Committee from Senator Pam Helming. She mentioned you and I believe Mr. Cotter, and thanked you for helping her understand part of our government as it matters. Probably something to do with the fair tax or something like that.
Oh, I'm thinking.
But she mentioned you by name.
Oh, I was probably the Article 5 Convention of States amendment process in our U.S. Constitution. So we'll get to that over the days to come. Yes, but
how nice that you were able just to help set policy in a way an understanding of it.
So people,
which is very great as one of our teachers. You know, that's what you do.
There's
nothing wrong with learning.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
High praise.
Thank you.
Proud
very
to
much.
Know you.
Oh. You guys. You know, sometimes you say things and you hope people are listening, but you never know until you get feedback. So it's great to have feedback like that. So,
it is.
Boy, I'm honored. So, Should we go on?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Civil War radio segment. Again, as a reminder, civil means that we're going to be polite and civilized and
to the best of our ability.
Right. Self-restraint.
Yeah, we all have qualifiers. That's a good point. And the war part is that we're probably going to differ on opinions, but we're going to handle it like adults. We're not going to throw fists. You know, we'll use words. As well. So it's funny that you should mention the Constitution and Senator Helming, because today what I was hoping to touch on is the legislative branch. A couple episodes ago, we talked about the three major branches. We all knew them, which was good, right? We have a legislative branch, which is our Congress, made up of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And we're talking federal. This is on the U.S. level. Think Washington, D.C. We have an executive branch that is now headed by President Donald Trump. He has a lot of agencies under his wing as an executive. His job is to make sure that the laws are executed, thus the executive branch. And then we have the judiciary, which is the judges and the courts that are to make sure that when those laws are executed, first of all, they don't violate our U.S. Constitution. This is, again, on the federal level. We're talking U.S. national level, not New York state level. But today, where does all this come from? Well, we have a United States Constitution, and I'm hoping that we can get through Article 1, which gives Congress authority. Okay, so I took some brief notes because there's a lot here in Article 1. And if you just, this is my copy of a constitution that is put out by the Annenberg Project. If you're not familiar with the Annenberg Project, they're considered more left of center in general. But they're about education, and also another supporter of this particular copy of the U.S. Constitution is the New York Times. And why do I use this one? Because there's what does it mean, or what it means sections that we're trying to break it down into modern language. And I'll be honest with you, I don't always agree with their interpretations. But it's good to know what other people think about our U.S. Constitution. Because, as we all know, words may be interpreted or even heard differently. And then what goes through my mind may be different than what goes through your mind when we hear a word.
Right.
So it might need clarification. Okay? So some people aren't going to agree with my interpretations either. But I'm going to throw them out there. All right? Any questions before we get going?
Nope, we're ready.
All right, so Article 1 has 10 sections to it. And I'm going to put this right up front so I don't forget. The only section that mentions states is Section 10. So this whole part of our Constitution deals with the authority given to Congress. Okay, so here's my little cheat sheet here that I'm going to use. I'm just going to run down this quickly, and then we're going to stop and probably focus on Section 8, because those are what are known as enumerated powers, which means that they're listed. They're specific powers that Congress has. And then we're probably going to go on to what's that mean today? And I was going to try to connect it to a possible government shutdown. Okay? So let's go. Section 1, first of all, it's a very short section, so I think I could even read this section. And then the rest I'll paraphrase or simplify. But Section 1 says, all legislative powers, that means the ability to make laws, herein granted shall be vested, which means given, to a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. So they make law. Not the president. Even though there's executive orders, he signs the law once it goes through the House, goes through the Senate, meets a majority, and then presented to him. And that's what the Congress does. Okay? And pretty simple. All right, moving right along here. Section 2 talks all about the House. And the most important thing that I want to point out in Section 2 is, because some of it's outdated, and there's footnotes where the modifications are made. So, for example, in Section 2, at the very bottom of the page, it says, modified by Amendment 14, Section 2. So some of this is has been changed by the amendment process, and we'll get into that in the future as well. So the thing that I wanted to point out, sole power of impeachment. The House has the sole power of impeachment. So if you think back to President Clinton days, he was actually impeached by the House for, I believe, lying under oath. Perjury, I think, is the actual charge.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Okay. So that is a sole power of the House. Moving on to Section 3, it's all about the Senate. I have to flip my pages here, so excuse me for a second. And this is relative today because in Section 3, there is the ability for the Senate to try, like in a trial, T-R-I-A-L, try the president that's been impeached. Going back to Clinton, he was found innocent of the charges. That's why he never was pursued criminally, because the Senate pushed it aside. And they have that authority to do that. Okay? Today, a term has been used with regards to Senator L. Franken. He is going to step aside. He made that public a couple days ago. And Minnesota, the state of Minnesota, has the ability to appoint a senator to fill his term. And it's the governor of the state of Minnesota. And that is actually mentioned in Section 3, in general, where that authority comes from. Okay, so that's relevant to today as well. Moving on to Section 4. Let me flip my pages here. Section 4 does mention states. It does say that the state can pick the times, places, and manner of holding their elections for senators and representatives. Okay, so that gives some authority to the states. And I want to remind everybody, it's the states that created the Constitution and the federal government, not the other way around. Because nowadays, modern times, I think a lot of us think that the federal government is the all-powerful, when it's supposed to be going back again to that shared, it's federalism, which means they're supposed to be sharing certain powers between the state and the U.S. government. Okay, so that's Section 4. Am I going too fast?
No. Nope.
Am I all right? Okay.
Going good.
All right.
The slow kid in the back is getting it.
Section 5 lists a number of ways that you can expel members of Congress based on some of the bad things or the wrong things they may have done. Like taking money for a vote is a bad thing. They're not supposed to do that. Moving on to Section 6, and then when we get to Section 8, I'm going to slow down a little bit here. Section 6, my brief notes here says that these are specific rules for members of both House and the Senate. So the first part there, Section 5, is how they can be expelled, and then they go on to mention some specific rules. Section 7, it's the process of how a bill becomes law and then must be approved and signed by the president. Section 8. Before I go into Section 8, if anybody wants to, that's listening, if you want to do some research, I don't know why, but I like YouTube. I think it's because I used to use YouTube with my students. Many times, you look around the classroom, and when you talk and talk and talk, students start to drift off. So I would talk for a little bit, show a video to back up what I'm saying, and that gets them to use more senses than just hearing. I read a long time ago in graduate school, the more senses you can use to learn, the stronger the learning. So if you can see something, if you can hear something, if you can touch something, if you can smell and taste it, it's even a stronger impression in your brain, so it lasts longer. So I haven't figured out a way for the kids to lick a textbook. I thought if you could come up with a way for a student to taste.
Can you do one of those sniff and scratch?
Oh, scratch and sniff. Do you remember those?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, there's proof, right? Advertisers have tried that in magazines where fragrance, right?
Yep.
If you can scratch this and, oh, yeah, now you remember when you go to the store, which you...
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the idea behind that. So, okay, now section 8. These are the enumerated powers. And I don't remember if I mentioned this earlier, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. But enumerated means that they're listed. Okay, so they're actual powers that Congress has. And I'm just going to read a couple of the major ones, and then we'll move on. Number one is to borrow money on the credit of the United States. And this is why you hear the figures in the news. We're over $20 trillion in debt. And a lot of people wonder, who do we owe the money to? Well, the good news is that most of the money is owed to us, United States citizens. And I think China is second who that money is owed to.
We owe them.
But our government borrows from us. Mm-hmm. When you put money into a savings bank or if you buy a U.S. savings bond, you're actually loaning money to the U.S. government. So that's considered part of that $20 trillion plus dollars worth of debt. If you do business with a life insurance company that has cash value on their life insurance policy, they have to. That's a guarantee that they have to pay you money for doing business with them. So to be real safe, an insurance company will take that money and loan it to the U.S. government. So why do you think they're loaning it to the U.S. government? This is a civics 101 economics. Go ahead, Mike. What do you think?
Because the belief is that the government will pay them back.
And
has stability, right?
And so far it has.
So
right?
far.
It has because they take money from our paychecks in the form of a tax. It gives them cash flow. Mike, think of your business. Mike, you're in business too. Yeah. I was in business. Tina, I don't know. But just think of your
She's
home.
In business, yeah.
I'm in business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cash flow, right? You can go borrow money way beyond your means as long as you show you can pay it back. And that's usually through cash flow. So our U.S. government, because they collect so much in taxes, has a good payment history. And that's why they can continue to borrow. Because last I read, and I'm going to get into some more specifics, about $4 trillion worth of revenue a year goes into the U.S. government. I see Mike's nodding. That sounds familiar.
Right, but we're behind $20 trillion.
Yeah, we owe $20 trillion in debt. So it means about five times our revenues is what's been loaned to our U.S. government. So the people that are loaning it must not be afraid of getting stiffed because they're still borrowing. Okay.
Well, if we lose this government, then what would you have for your infrastructure? Your where would you be? As long as it's in power, there's the ability to take taxes to pay them back.
Good. Yes.
Without them.
Yes.
Where would we be? You know, Mad Max.
Yes, and then maybe in a future show we'll ask. You know, what is a possible means of collateral for all these loans if they can't pay them back? So think about that, and after Christmas we'll talk.
Perfect.
So going back to Section 8 here, so borrowing money, regulate commerce or trade with foreign nations and among several states and with Indian tribes.
Just talking about that on the previous interview.
Yeah, with Mr. Jameson, right? And just a side note, I've often wondered, could I become a citizen of his nation? Can I have dual citizenship? Can I be a U.S. citizen, and maybe I'm going to just use citizen of the Seneca Nation?
Oh, I bet you could.
I don't know. See, I'm such...
If you have that heritage...
I was just going to say, there's a naturalization process there, but given the fact that you've identified that you do have some ancestry, maybe relating to a Native American tribe, perhaps there's an opportunity.
Yeah. So it was just a thought.
I think it has to be on the maternal side.
On the maternal side.
Right.
Interesting.
As opposed to the fraternal side.
I think it doesn't hurt, but it's better if it goes up the mother's side.
Mother's side.
We'll have to have him back answer these questions.
All right.
What's the name of your tribe, the Fagawis?
I don't go there. I've heard that one. Remember, I'm from East Rochester, so a lot of those Italian sounding words I've heard. Okay. The coin money. That's another thing. The coin money, right? We're not supposed to be laughing.
I'm laughing because I feel like I shouldn't even be here. I'm uncomfortable.
It's like Tom Hanks. There's no laughing.
You're comparing me to Ronnie, the fish and game guy? Oh, great.
You're making me laugh on air because... Oh. Which you're like, because you want to hit me with a stick for...
I didn't...
You turn around, Peter, right. There's a bunch of sticks right there.
All right. All right. Get back on board. Let's go. All right. Go back to this. To establish post offices and post roads so that the mail can get to those post offices. That's another duty of Congress. To... define and punish piracy and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations, and that's one of the reasons why we have the Marine Corps.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. And the Navy. Yep. To declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. To raise and support armies. To provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. So that's Section 8. There's two more sections, and I'm, again, going to hit on them quickly. This one, I think, is historically important. In Section 9, the very first paragraph, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. And that means it went away after that year. This particular section was the attempt in the eventual outlawing of slavery. So back when this was put together, slavery in America was acceptable. This was saying no more migration or importation of such persons.
Okay. What year was that?
This was in 1808 it would expire. This was signed and ratified in 1789. So... 1789 to 1808, that's about 9 years before slavery, the sale of slaves from other countries, was outlawed by the U.S. Constitution. Okay? So, and that was an attempt to compromise with the southern states. So, what's next here?
Number 10.
Here's where it starts to mention no state shall in number 10. So that one, I think, is probably one of the only sections of Article 1 where states are actually prohibited from doing things. So the very first thing is no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, which means a confederation is when you've gathered together for a common cause. Grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, and so on. So that Section 10 is where it specifically states that no state shall. Okay? And that's pretty much it for Article 1, giving Congress those enumerated or specific powers. Okay? Questions? Yeah.
I don't know, just as a modern one. So where does something like Bitcoin fall in with that?
You know, that is a... I am really not 100% confident or understanding Bitcoin.
Nor am I. But it is somebody's attempt in some state, from wherever they started it, to form a type of currency.
Yes.
To go outside of our currency.
Yes.
And my, you know, like the Confederates had Confederate money,
yes,
right, and so that would have been illegal for them to produce that,
right, right. And if I'm understanding Bitcoin properly, and please, listeners, comment on our
ignorance
at Civil War Radio on Facebook, or you know, I would say you can call, but. You know, the number of the call is not really working right now. So just comment on our Facebook page if you know better. But my understanding of Bitcoin, it's basically an accounting system.
That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, where you have...
It's an electronic accounting system, and there is no coin, there is no hard piece of something that you actually own.
Yeah, that's how I understand it. I know, so think about it. How is that different than buying and trading stocks, other than with a stock, they give you a certificate?
Sometimes.
Sometimes, and you might... I have one certificate of Disney, because it was... It's worth...
Disney.
A share of Disney.
Ooh, that was a good one to have this week.
Well, the reason why is you have to request it, because they won't give you shares unless you request it. It actually has an animated picture of Walt Disney and some of the important characters like Mickey and Minnie Mouse. So it's suitable for framing. It's a stock certificate that you can hang in a child's bedroom because it shows those animated characters, Pluto and things like that. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, your question again as to the Bitcoin. I really don't feel comfortable talking about it.
We can't pass judgment on it just yet. We gotta look into it.
Yeah.
But, right.
Yep. But what you bring us forward to, and you let me know if I have time, is that there was talk a couple weeks ago, the early part of December, the end of November, about our government shutting down because there wasn't going to be enough money. Okay, I did some research, and it appears that nobody really cares anymore because I can't find anything other than a date. Right. So December 22nd of 2017, there's going to be another deadline for the government to come up with money to keep operating. These facts and figures I have, we don't have enough time to go into them. Just, again, be reminded that not everything the government does is essential. I did find in my research that they, the government employees, were not happy with the use of the word non-essential employee. They took offense to that. So that has been changed. You may not hear that term again other than right here on Civil War Radio about non-essential government employees.
Well, you want to talk about non-essential. If you look at the federal, state, and local government as a whole, there are over 22.2 million workers, which is 16.7% of the United States workforce.
So almost...
You're right. I got that figure.
Roughly one out of five people work for the government. So that's including, you know, administration, education, police, fire, health.
Right. Yeah. The guy who cleans up the hallways in the schools.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Lunch ladies. I mean, they're all
roughly,
government employees.
Roughly one in five. And in New York, it's about over 179,000.
And I'll bet you in Washington, D.C., it's even higher.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, those are all government workers.
Yeah.
The Office of Personnel Management in 2011 said there were 2.7 million civil servants employed by the federal government.
Yeah.
So government's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and something I found out, too, is that their pay is huge compared to the private sector. The figures that I was looking for on my cheat sheet here, and this is from memory, so forgive me, but I believe that the average pay is about $85,000. Which is currently about 76% higher than a non-government employee would make for similar services.
And that's salary, correct? So that's not including health care and other benefits, which are typically
when you add in health care and other benefits, it's closer to $120,000.
Wow.
That's the average. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So now you know why we're $20 trillion in debt, and we, the American people, are kind of on the hook.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
All right.
That's great.
Yep.
That's Armin Marinetti with Civil War Radio and the First Amendment, right?
Yep. Article, no.
Oh,
Article 1.
Article 1.
Of the Constitution.
Yes. Our rule book.
Our rule book.
Mm-hmm.
Our government's rule book.
Okay. And when we come back from these messages, we will come back with three men in a microphone, that girl.
This girl.
This girl, right? Well, not this girl.
What?
So, and after these messages.
What's the matter, cupcake? Winter's here and all you have to look forward to is yellow snow. That Einstein you're dating wants to know where the white goes when the snow melts? Thinking of all the fun you'll have schlepping home at 20 miles an hour? Car won't start, mud, slush, salt, traffic accidents, shoveling, brushing, and wading through a snowdrift? just to check the mail? Your boots leak and you only have one glove and it's stuck? Frozen wipers, locks, fingers, toes, and noses. Hey, at Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange, we agree. Winter sucks. So let us help you bear the frozen tundra that is upstate New York. The Military Exchange has everything you'll ever need to kick the crap out of old man winter. Warm hats, caps, gloves, socks, long underwear, Polypro, thermal, wiki, and super wiki. Gore-Tex insulates, wool, jackets, parkas, pants, and boots. There's lots of fun things to do in the snow, but none of it's fun unless you gear up at Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Stop in and see Corporal Thornton. He'll even show you how to write your name in the snow.
Great googly moogly.
Clerico, can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been on? Welcome, enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs. I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge. Fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Mono Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out.
I'm Melissa J. Walker. I'm here to introduce Peter Jemison. He is part of the Huron clan, the Seneca Nation. He's a co-author of the Treaty of Canandaigua, 1794, and he's the guest speaker this morning to talk about the treaty and
part of Ganondagan.
Okay, Ganondagan.
Yes.
And all right, so Peter, come up to the mic.
I will.
And we want to welcome you to our show. Thank you for coming down. And we've all been very curious about the treaty with Canandaigua. I know it's signed every year in November, mm-hmm. I think 7th?
November 11th.
11th. Oh, yeah. So on Veterans Day.
On Veterans Day, right.
And just so we get it out of the way.
Yes.
So Mike Yarger wants to know. He has a question for you.
Okay.
Okay, so the city of Canandaigua says that it is a chosen spot.
Right.
And yet, if you go back 100 years ago, you can find a trade manual where they say the city of Canandaigua means beautiful spot. Mm-hmm. So what's a true translation of the word Canandaigua, and are we even pronouncing it correctly?
Well, okay. So in of the Great Hill, of which I'm a member, in English, they call us Seneca, but to ourselves, we are Onondaga. So in Onondaga, we say Tekanontagwe. Tekanontagwe can mean the child. It could also refer to the idea that, in another way, if you say it a little differently, that there was a hill, and they cut that hill down. So I assume it's the hill that kind of comes up toward that was at some time or another cut down more by plowing or whatever they did. But you can translate it to mean the chosen spot.
Okay.
Okay. You have a question?
Oh, just the pronunciation one more time.
Tekanondagwe.
Okay. Oh, so, yeah, right. What is the right pronunciation?
Tekanondagwe. Tekanondagwe. Again, it can be translated as the chosen spot. It's one of its translations.
So it really is the chosen spot, or could be anything else?
Like I said, pronouncing it just a little bit differently, and right now that word is escaping me. It can mean that they shaved the hill down on Main Street, you know, as it comes up to the courthouse. Maybe at one time it was a steeper hill. I don't know.
Could it really be the bald spot?
I don't know if it means that. No.
Now, I notice on your shirt.
Yes.
You have the turtle. Is that the turtle clan?
That's, well, this is the symbol of Mother Earth, the turtle. Oh, we think of the Earth as the back of a turtle. It comes from our creation. Sky Woman came and fell from the sky, gave birth to a daughter who ultimately gave birth to twins, and these twins went about making the Earth the way it is today. Sort of the left-handed twin and the right-handed twin went about making the Earth the way you and I experience it.
Neat. Now, you're part of Gnonagon.
Yes.
And I just got to throw this in there because then I got my, what I call a mic question. I got to get it off my chest.
Okay.
So I visited up there.
All right.
And several, I've gone up there two or three times over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And several years ago, I'd say over 10, so this might ring a bell, and I got a feeling it has something to do with you. I was going through where they sell stuff. It was after one of the museum shows, and there was this painting. It was an oil painting
mm-hmm.
of a very regal-looking, I'll say Native American. His legs were crossed.
Mm-hmm.
He was smoking a cigar, and he had a pair of red Keds on.
Mm.
Do you remember that painting?
No, I don't remember that painting. I really don't.
It was big, and it was $300, and I couldn't afford it, and I always wished I'd bought it. And it had a lot of, they had the red pulled right out in the painting. That's but you're an artist, too.
I'm an artist. That's correct.
So tell us a little bit about your background with art.
Well, first of all, I went to Buffalo State for my undergraduate work. And as a part of that experience, I got to go to Italy. I lived in the city of Siena, and I went to the University of Siena. And in the morning, we did academics, and particularly we were studying Renaissance art, the art for which Michelangelo and Titian and many others are well known. So we, part of our experience was we would study a city for a week, and then Friday night we'd get on a bus and travel to that city and spend the weekend there visiting the museums, visiting the architecture of the city, and enjoying the food and getting to really know something about each individual city. Say Rome, Venice, Padua, Florence, these were all part of our trip. In the afternoon we got to do fresco painting on wet plaster, and there was a method that they had for actually being able to remove that painting from the wall. So I had what I call a rather classical training in my art, but on the other hand, Buffalo State is located right across the street from the Albright Knox Art Gallery, and their collection is really from the post-impressionists like a Vincent van Gogh or a Paul Gauguin all the way up to today. And so, I made a point of studying all the work that was collected in that museum and learning as much as I could about it. For $5, you could become a student member and you had access to their library and all the books in there. Their only stipulation was don't put anything back. We don't want to get anything mixed up. Take out what you want to look at and just leave it on a table. For a student who wants to learn, that's the most ideal situation. Following my graduation from college, I moved to New York City to, quote, become a famous artist, I had no idea what that really meant, and I didn't have the finances to really do it. But I had a bit of luck, and the next thing I know, I was showing in a very, what I would call, prestigious gallery about 9 months after arriving there. It was just an invitational show. It was just one opportunity. But the gallery owner was actually very interested in me. Unfortunately, I was very young, and for some very, hard-to-understand reason, I fell into a depression and really could not live in New York City and had to leave and move back to Buffalo and teach, and that began a bit of travel to California and then back to the East Coast again. But around 1971, I really connected with other Native American artists, again in New York City. And I began to not only show with Native artists, but also create exhibits of Native artists that I met, who came from around the country, really. And that has continued to this day. I still curate exhibitions of Native American artists. I still show with Native artists. I'm showing in New York City right now at a place called Artist Space, an exhibit that opened in November and will run till the end of the year. And my work is sometimes inspired by landscape, and sometimes it has a political tone to it. You know, there are a lot of things that we deal with as Native Americans in terms of our treaties, in terms of our sovereignty. So, you know, some of that is expressed in my work.
That's great. It's great that you have that outlet and that you can share and that people can enjoy your artwork.
Yes.
So, Peter, if you could tell us, bringing it back to Gnanagon then, tell us about this peace treaty with Canandaigua.
Okay. I'll start with Gnanagon just so that we cover that.
Okay.
It's the site of a 17th century Seneca town. So Gnanagon existed from 1655 until 1687.
You remember that, don't you, Mike?
Yeah.
And it was attacked. We were attacked by a campaign of the French, literally sent to attack us by Louis XIV, the King of France, sent a man known as the Marquis de Denonville at the head of an army of 3,200 men that came to attack four Seneca towns, basically to gain control over the fur trade. We were supplying beaver pelts to the French, the Dutch, and the English, and Louis XIV wanted a monopoly on fur trade. He didn't want the English or the Dutch to trade with us. And so he sent an army to basically wipe us out and to gain control of the Niagara River, because the Niagara River, even though you can't paddle up it, you can portage carrying your canoe up the escarpment from Lake Ontario to Lake Erie and giving you access to all the western Great Lakes where there was the greatest abundance of beaver. And so that's what, caused this attack. But what he succeeded in doing was not to destroy us, but to destroy our food. And they recorded that they destroyed 1,200,000 bushels of corn. Even if that's an exaggeration, let's just say it's 500,000 bushels of corn. No domestic animals. The work is primarily done by women who are the agriculturalists, with men assisting during harvest time. And, of course, you had to produce a lot of food because as many as 4,500 people lived at Gnanagon during that time period, and there were three other Seneca towns. So that's kind of the history of Gnanagon. In 1987, it opened as a New York State Historic Site, the only historic site in New York State that interprets a Native American theme. And I've been the manager since the beginning, since it opened. But the Treaty of Canandaigua, this is signed in 1794, November the 11th, right here in this city. And it's negotiated by a man named Timothy Pickering, who was sent here by George Washington. At the close of the Revolutionary War, you know, a treaty of peace was signed between Great Britain and the struggling 13 colonies. At that point, there were 15 colonies, 15 small states. And that treaty does not include the Haudenosaunee, does not include the Iroquois Confederacy. Even though we were involved in the fighting, and even though our warriors chose a side and fought either behind the British or fought with the Americans, one or the other. But in the Treaty of Paris of 1783, we're not included. And what happens is it's sort of, they think, since they the Americans defeated the British, that they have access to all of the land in this part of the state. Excuse me, we're still occupying this land. This is still our Aboriginal homeland. We're living here. And the next thing we know, we have settlers coming in, and they're actually shooting us like people go out and shoot deer today. And so, you know, we really had to begin to bring to George Washington that he had to get control of his people, that he needed to address law and order on what was then called the frontier. And at that point in time, the capital of the United States is really Philadelphia. So our people are going to Philadelphia, and they're addressing George Washington and saying, we need to arrive at some kind of a final peace so that we can live in peace and friendship forever. And this begins a series of conversations, and at the same time, we have a Western Confederacy, which is located in what we now call Ohio, pretty much, and they're saying, join up with us, and we'll push these people right back into the sea. When the Revolutionary War ended, the army was pretty much disbanded. And so the U.S. was in a very vulnerable situation. You had a Confederacy, very powerful Western Confederacy, asking us to join them and asking us to help them attack, basically, this fledgling government. George Washington weighed those two consequences. I mean, this goes back to a time period when what we call Fort Niagara today was still in British hands on this side of the river, not on the opposite side of the river. So, you know, it was a very tenuous situation, and Washington had to raise a whiskey tax on the people who produce whiskey in order to raise his army up again, and then to send an army out to attack this Western Confederacy. They had been defeated twice. Losses way worse than Custer's loss, for example, took place, you know, in these battles. Finally, he sends a man out whose name is Mad Anthony Wayne. He's called Mad Anthony Wayne, and he defeats the Western Confederacy while we are here actually negotiating. And in the end, we wind up choosing to negotiate a peace treaty with Timothy Pickering. We define what lands belong to us, what lands belong to the Cayuga, what lands belong to the Onondaga, what lands belong to the Oneida and the Mohawk. Many Mohawk had followed a warrior named Joseph Brant into what we now call Ontario, Canada, and they were given land there by the king along the Grand River called the Haldimand Tract. So we had people living there. We had people who had remained in their homelands, and we were among those that remained here. And we negotiated a treaty. It's signed November the 11th, 1794, and it creates a lasting peace and friendship between the United States. And it defines how we deal with the United States. For example, Article 7 says that our dealings should be directly with the executive branch. It doesn't talk about the legislature. It doesn't talk about the judiciary. It says when we have an issue, we bring that to the executive branch. And likewise, the executive branch, if it has an issue, brings it directly to us for a discussion, for a conversation. So, you know, that has been the relationship. And for us, the Canandaigua Treaty is still in place. And we prove that by coming here every November the 11th and commemorating that treaty by marching from the West Gibson Street Elementary School to the lawn of the Ontario County Courthouse to remind the United States that this treaty that they signed with us for all intents and purposes for us is still in place. There have been many violations to the treaty. For example, the treaty says that we are entitled to free use and enjoyment of our land. In the 1960s, around 1965, the Army Corps of Engineers flooded 10,000 acres of our land on the Allegheny Reservation, building a dam to protect Pittsburgh. That dam could have been built any other place, but they chose to build it on our land and took 10,000 acres of our land from us. So, clearly a violation of the treaty. Another case would be the Tuscarora community. They built a very large reservoir right on a portion of their reservation to supply the Niagara Power Project. So these are the kinds of things we've had to deal with over the years, and only because we're vigilant do we prevent things like that happening again where there are further takings of our land. We have a very small land base today.
What about in modern times, just between Ganondagon and Canandaigua? How is that relationship?
Well, it's very good. I mean, this way, I would put it this way. Ellen Palomini has always been very supportive of the commemoration of the Canandaigua Treaty. Today, the Friends of Ganondagon are the ones who really carry on this commemoration. There used to be a committee that took care of the commemoration every year, but for the last, I would say almost 5 years, it's been the Friends of Ganondagon, a not-for-profit membership organization that puts together the treaty, puts together the meal, you know, hires the singers that sing for the evening social dance, coordinates with the police and coordinates with renting a tent and things like that. Simple things, but they have to be done every year. But the County of Ontario has always been very supportive to allow us to use the lawn there, to give us power in order to have the microphone at the rock, maintaining a white pine tree that we plant there. And Ellen has always come for the commemoration, Ellen Palomini. So the city of Canandaigua has been very supportive in that way, and it's a very positive relationship.
So we're talking about local government here, but what is the political climate within your group right now in terms of attitudes surrounding sovereignty and things like that at the state and national level?
Okay. I come from a elective system of government. In other words, every 2 years we elect a president, we elect a treasurer, we elect a clerk, and we elect 16 councilors. We don't elect them all at once. Some of those terms carry over, okay? But we have two major communities, Allegheny and Cattaraugus. We elect 8 counselors from each of those communities. They represent the people of that particular territory. And our relationship is based on this treaty. That we, when this treaty was signed, it was signed nation to nation. And treaties are the supreme law of the land, according to this. Okay? So because of that, our relationship is we are a sovereign, you are a sovereign. We can live in peace and friendship forever so long as we can respect the right of the other to exist. You know, and that we allow that we're different. We're not the same people, right? We have a different language. We have a different way of life, we call it. We have a different set of laws that govern us. We have ceremonial way of life. We have a knowledge of the plants and the trees and the animals here. You know, this is where we come from. And so, you know, what we have always have to do is to try and maintain that sovereignty. And to do that means that we have to deal with all the different entities that are a part of either the state of New York or that are a part of the federal government. And right now, I'll just give you one small example. We're in a kind of a standoff with the New York State Thruway Authority. The worst stretch of road on the entire thruway is crossing our reservation right now because they refuse to come to the table and sit down and talk to our people on a person-to-person basis and work out these details. If you're going to come onto our land and you're going to resurface the road, you do so by coming to us and talking because it's on our land. It's on our territory, okay? They don't want to accept that idea. And so that road has been in terrible shape for probably, again, about 5 years, roughly. What the end will be of that, I don't know. But that's another example of where we have to deal with an entity like that, which is, you know, really not the New York State government, but is a branch of the New York State government.
Sure. And weren't there events like tire burnings and things like that in that stretch, maybe not related to upkeep of the roads?
Yeah, it wasn't related to that at the time. You know, it was related to, do we have the right to run enterprises on our territory? And we believe we do have that right to run enterprises on our territory, and we have a right to not have to charge those people that come onto our territory a tax for them if they're coming for cigarettes or if they're coming for gas. Where we really get into, you know, these dicey situations is there are people who are private business owners, and then there's the nation. Really, what we're trying to support, me personally, is the nation's right to have our own enterprises, and that our own enterprises generate the income we need to have a nation, to have
self-sustaining.
Yeah, to be self-sustaining, exactly, to provide employment, to be able to provide housing, to be able to provide health and welfare, have a clinic, whatever it is that we need to do. Well, if you're going to do that, you cannot rely entirely on federal grants or any other kind of grants because those come and go. And as soon as there is one, they become very competitive. Everybody has to go for that money. And so if we don't have a source or a stream of income for ourselves, you know, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Yeah.
So Ganondagan has gone through a modernization as of late. Lots of new buildings. It looks amazing. Can you tell us briefly a little bit about that?
Yeah. Probably, you know, it was a long time ago, but at least 15 years ago, I began to really focus on building a new Seneca Art and Culture Center at Ganondagan. In order to do that, I basically had to raise $13 million. And we did so through, you know, private grants. We did so through state money that the governor put up, that Parks put up, and Seneca Nation put up, foundations, et cetera. In the end, we generated $13 million, and we were able to build this building, working with two architects, one from New York City, known as Francois de Manil, and the DeWolf Partnership from Rochester. Working together, they developed a plan for that building, and, you know, October of 2015, we opened it. I'll just say this much. Our next exhibit will be an exhibit about Haudenosaunee women, from our creation story up to the present, looking as well at the influence that our women had on the suffragists during the time period when they were struggling for women's rights. So that exhibit will open in March, and I think it will be a very eye-opening and interesting exhibit for everyone.
That's beautiful.
Two quick questions. One, I was a former student at FLCC's Conservation Department.
Okay.
And they said that recently New York State said that
Ganondagan.
You're going to kill me when we get off the air when through your
go
place.
For it.
They said that there's birds on the property now, yes. That...
Yeah, we are now a bird conservation area. And so that means that a portion of our land has been really set aside for birds and for the protection of birds, because we have birds that both nest there and, you know, have their young there and, you know, use that area for, you know, throughout the early part of the spring and up into about mid-summer. And so, you know, we are unique. We're the only site in the only park that has that designation of a bird conservation area, and so we're happy to be able to say that.
And you also have the White Corn Project.
Yeah, we have a project where we're still raising, and we're also getting from other farmers our heirloom corn that's been around for a couple thousand years, and we produce three products. We produce a roasted white corn flour, and we also produce a whole hulled corn that is used for soups and for salads and so forth. And that is sold by the Friends of Ganondagan. We are, on the one hand, encouraging people to continue growing the corn, the farmers that are doing it, and on the other hand, we're supplying it back to our community, our early childhood learning center, trying to supply it back to our elders program, and at the same time, putting it out on the market for other people to try and use.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Well, Mr. Temison, do you have a title?
I'm the Historic Site Manager for Ganondagan.
Really appreciate you coming on the show, mm-hmm. And it's been a pleasure. Love to see your artwork someday.
Yep.
And thank you. And you can always come back and tell us more.
Okay. Tim, thank you for the invitation this morning. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Great.
Should I get a picture with you?
Okay.
Why not? People do that with veterans all the time. I might as well get one from you.
Are you in Vietnam?
No, after.
After, okay.
Gulf War, and then Somalia.
Okay.
You look just like Grandpa.
All right, are we rolling right into Civil War Radio?
Yep. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Hour 2 of Three Men and a Microphone, WOKR, Canandaigua, 1310, first in local news, right after these messages.
Christmas is the time of year when giving is its own reward, and the staff at Iron Mike's Military Exchange in Canandaigua would like to thank you for your patronage and for supporting our military, Veterans Talk Show, and local charities. Have a hard-to-buy four-person on your list? Iron Mike's Military Exchange offers gift certificates, the gift that never gets returned. Plus, any purchase over $100 will receive a free set of custom dog tags to honor that loved one in your family. Iron Mike's Military Exchange has expanded to 5,000 square feet and has plenty of great gift ideas. A wide selection of winter gear in wool and Gore-Tex, plus military collectibles for the veteran in your life. Merry Christmas from everyone at Iron Mike's Military Exchange, Route 332 in Canandaigua. And please remember, it's really all about the little baby born in a manger.
Tactical to practical. Cold weather clothing and gear at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Polypro cold weather masks, long underwear, gloves, boots, socks, caps, parkas, and field jackets on sale now. Tactical to practical. Cold weather clothing and gear at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Polypro cold weather masks, long underwear, gloves, boots, socks, caps, parkas, and field jackets on sale now at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua. The Military Talk Show. Iron Mike's MX.com. Call us at 394-2960.
Peace is the result of retraining your mind to process life as it is, rather than as you think it should be. Please leave your expectations at the door. This Life's Moment is brought to you by Woody's Cafe, 2375 Route 332 in Canandaigua, New York. Breakfast and lunch cafe, cooking soulful food using local compostable products whenever possible. Local, seasonable, sustainable, simple. Woody's Cafe.
Kim's Shaggy De Chic Pet Spa, a natural choice in pet grooming, located at 1010 South Clinton Avenue in Rochester. We are your premier full-service pet salon. Call to make an appointment, 585-355-4761.
Tune in every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m., for three men and a microphone and a lady. Hear all about local news, politics, fishing report, and sports, as well as all the talk about town and the scuttlebutt in the city. To keep up on the show, stay connected and visit us on Facebook at Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone. Presented each week, Saturday 8 to 10 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Sponsored by the Military Exchange, Canandaigua, New York. And to catch up on past episodes, go to IronMikesMX.com or WOKR 1310. Wasting time, yeah. I left my home in Georgia.